This is Ovinology.
Welcome back, Ovinologists. Button up your lab coats and put on your safe science goggles, because we're about to get biological. I promise the whole season won't be so STEM-y, but if we're going to understand how sheep have shaped the world, we have to study grass. I've stated many times in previous episodes that I'm a grass farmer first, because good grass grows good sheep. Sheep graze. That's not news. But what is grazing? Isn't it just when something eats grass, and isn't there a ton of grass? And who exactly grazes anyway? 24 million years ago, monogastric animals developed a better system for digesting nutrients from cellulose fibers. That is, ruminants, including bison, wildebeests, deer, antelope, elk, moose, goats, giraffes, guanacos, okapi, gazelles, impala, water buffalo, and yes, sheep, developed their unique four-chamber digestive system. Other animals with three-chamber stomachs graze, like hippopotami and camels, as do monogasts like horses, pigs, donkeys, and rhinoceros. Rumination is like nature's own Rube Goldberg device. The animal takes a bite of grass. When swallowed, the grass passes into the rumen, where it ferments. Fermentation creates heat, which keeps the animal warm in winter, and it breaks down complex carbohydrates. Mixed with saliva, the grass separates into solid cud and liquid matter. Now, the cud is regurgitated. The animal chews it again to break it into smaller particles. You've all seen cows laying down, happily chewing away, or my sheep. As it breaks down, more nutrients can be extracted by the microbes living in the rumen and the reticulum. After this second pass, the food matter passes into the omasum. In addition to absorbing ammonia and volatile fatty acids, the omasum controls what particles pass into the abomasum, or true stomach. Just like our stomachs, this compartment releases acids to break the food down even more before it passes into the small intestine. Here's a fun thing. Grass tends to be super high in carbs, especially feral cousins of corn and sorghum, like Johnson grass. It's like eating candy. So why don't we see a lot of diabetic sheep and cows? Well, most of these carbs are converted by the rumen into volatile fatty acids, which is a veritable buffet for the animal's internal microbes. To say thank you for the feast, the microbes pass on amino acids, which are absorbed in the intestine. Yum. In the process of perfecting this unique digestive system, ruminants traded their upper teeth for a tough gummy plate. They bite the grass and grind it, and because there are no teeth to touch, their lower dentition grows continuously throughout their lives. But instead of chewing on branches like rabbits or beavers, ruminants file their teeth down by grazing. Grass contains a high amount of silica. Yep, it's the same as sand, glass, and those little packets that say do not eat. So every bite they take files their bottom teeth down. All of this is super complex and amazing, but it's also very inefficient. Ruminants drop a ton of undigested food, nutrients, bacteria, and microbes in every poo. Farmers call this poor feed conversion. But there's a reason they develop this way. Just like the microbes pass on amino acids to say, hey, thanks for the sugar, ruminants drop food on the earth that feeds them as an incentive for that food to keep growing. So grazing is just ruminants like nomming on anything that grows, right? What about foraging? Foraging, or browsing, includes leaves from shrubs and trees, vines, berries, nuts, mushrooms, bark, lichen, flowers, things like that. Grazing involves cropping vegetative matter in a field, plain, prairie, or savanna, and includes primarily grass species. So we've looked at how grazing benefits ruminants, but what does it do for the plants? You may have noticed we're in a bit of a catastrophe here on Earth. We're losing topsoil at an alarming rate, erosion is off the charts, trees are being cut down for development, burning in wildfires, and in some cases, just plain giving up and landing in your yard. Habitat loss is a real thing. The planet is getting hotter. We're losing access to clean water. The rain doesn't fall like it used to. There's either too much or not enough. Plants need water to grow. And the microbes that maintain soil health need water to thrive. Rain falls on the ground. If the surface is permeable, the water soaks into the soil and is stored in the earth. If it's impermeable, as with a parking lot, the water either stays on the surface, sometimes resulting in flood, or runs off the nearest depression, carrying the topsoil with it. Obviously, we want that water to be stored in the ground, right? It keeps our shoes dry and helps the plants grow. Additionally, the more water the earth absorbs, the more it can hold, meaning it takes longer to dry out between rainfalls. This stored water gives plants something to uptake through their root systems. We want healthy savannas and prairies because they actually keep the soil cooler than forests do. That's a good reason not to mow your lawn as frequently, or to cut it quite as short. How do we make room in the ground for more water? And how do we make sure the water goes into the soil instead of running away with it? Well, grass grows in both directions, up and down. Let me give you an example. A bison grazes the seed head off some grass. The grass is broken up in digestion, and the seed's surface gets scarred by stomach acid or abrasion as it moves through the digestive tract. The bison poops. The seed lands on the soil, it's primed and ready to germinate. Now the first thing it does is send down a taproot. This long main root anchors the plant and reaches for nutrients in the deepest layers of soil it can access. It sprouts leaves, starts growing up toward the sun, engaging in that beautiful cycle of photosynthesis, storing water from below and chlorophyll above. The taller that plant gets, the bigger its root mass in the soil. There's the same amount of matter up top and underneath. This has to stay in symmetry, meaning that when the plant is grazed, it experiences some root dieback as well. Those dead roots decompose and are directly available to feed the soil ecology, enriching the soil and aerating it because there's little pockets left where the roots were. And what do those pockets do? They store water. Now that plant wants nothing more than to grow to maturity and produce seeds. Seeds make more grass, but they also protect the mother plant. As it matures, the plant becomes tougher. Not only is it less palatable, it's more difficult to digest. But the best fertilizer for a plant is another plant. So mature grass gets consumed, largely passes through undigested, and returns to the soil in poop to fertilize the field. What else does poop do? Well, let's say our field has terrible erosion and massive cracks in the soil. There's not a lot of coverage. The earth can't really hold water because there aren't many root pockets. It's dry, the microbes have a tough time surviving there, and an even harder time doing their actual job. So we put a big flock of sheep in the field, close together, so they can't be very choosy. They have to eat what's in front of them, not what they like best. As they move across the field, the toes of their cloven hooves dig in, crushing vegetation, breaking down dead matter, aerating the soil. The next time it rains, the depressions made by their hooves will hold water, slowing the runoff. They pee, not in unison, in various places throughout the field. Urine is high in urea, which is a natural nitrogen fertilizer. As it soaks into the earth, it feeds the plants and the microbes and adds much needed moisture. Not every plant is palatable though. So the vegetation that doesn't get eaten is trampled, and these matted grasses will further delay runoff during the next rainstorm. Finally, the sheep poop all over the field. Manure shades the soil temporarily, it covers those cracks, and it feeds the existing microbiome and adds bacteria and microorganisms from the animal's own system to the soil ecology. And yet again, manure adds moisture to the field. Were you able to count the number of ways these grazers made water more absorbable by the earth? And all they were doing was eating. Now, I mentioned that we packed the sheep into the field pretty tightly. That's called stocking density. Wild herds don't keep track of stocking density, but they do stay together and move as a unit. Two things keep a herd moving: grass ahead of them and predators behind. Now, as shepherds, we prevent the flock from moving continuously with fences, and we keep predators from pressuring them with the same. So now we must manage moving the flock across whatever area we intend at a rate similar to that found in nature. This is where the science meets the art in rotational grazing. In their natural state, the life cycle of a grazing animal is in sync with their food source. Babies are born in spring, when there's enough vegetation to support an increase in the flock. Adults mate in fall, when the female's body is well conditioned enough to support pregnancy, and before winter causes her to rely on fat reserves for her survival. At its best, the symbiotic relationship between plant and animal supports ideal populations of each. Grazing is important for fire and invasive plant prevention, native plant management, and erosion control. Done incorrectly, however, it can lead to soil erosion and degradation, loss of microbiome, an increase in drought and invasive plant species, and loss of native flora and fauna. In the next episode, we'll look at the third member of the grazing triad, the soil. Then we'll explore the differences between grazing and mowing in vegetation management. Is one better than the other? Can they work together? Find out as season 2 of Ovinology continues.